Hello, and welcome to this month's edition of Sports Nutrition Update. Here is Corey Hawley and this month's presentation of Sports Nutrition Update.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Sports Nutrition Update, Volume 14, Number 10. In the last edition of Clinical Review, my topic was kids at the gym. When's the right time to introduce them? The health of our children is a huge responsibility for parents, grandparents, and our entire society. We can't expect a five-year-old to understand nutrition biochemistry or exercise physiology, so it's up to us to teach them why it's important to exercise routinely and eat clean as a way of life for the rest of their lives. It's all about protecting them. Thanks to science and research in molecular genetics, we now know that environment and lifestyle determine the outcome of our health, body composition, and performance more than any other factor, including our genes themselves. This means we have enormous control over our outcome, and that if we change positively, we get positive results. If we do something negative, we get negative results. That's how simple it is. The best age to begin weight training is 5 to 7 years old, depending on the maturity, development, and enthusiasm of the young person. This position is accepted by the American College of Sports Medicine, the Mayo Clinic, and the American Academy of Pediatrics. Children who lift weights should be mindful of several lifting principles and receive expert instruction and supervision from a qualified teacher. Of course, this concept applies to all of us as adults. Contrary to conventional belief, weightlifting will not stunt a child's growth, will not put their heart at risk, and will not reduce their flexibility. In fact, the opposite is true. Another good example of the Costanza principle at work, the opposite of convention is true. On this edition of Clinical Review, my topic is PSN number 29, carbs. Unfortunately, most people no longer consume carbohydrates in the ancient traditional form, meaning carbs that force you to chew them thoroughly and longer, carbs that fill you up with water and fiber, that supply the body with antioxidants and life-giving essential micronutrients, and low glycemic carbs that provide a superior fuel source and a higher sense of satiation, things like yams, beans, and lentils. But by far the most important thing to understand about dietary carbohydrates is that they are not essential for humans to consume. Natural whole food plant foods like organic greens, radishes, and celery consist primarily of carbohydrates, not protein or fat. But they do contain many essential micronutrients, polyphenols, carotenoids, and enzymes that are extremely beneficial for our health. That should be the purpose of eating these foods high in carbohydrates. But alas, as a species, we've traded nutrition security and intelligence for a cheaper source of straight up taste and pleasure. That's what it's all about with most people in mind. They just eat. They think about the pleasure, not the nutritional biochemistry of the food and its effects on their heart health, their immune system, and their life, especially long term. The original diet of humans for hundreds of thousands of years, and definitely before the dawn of agriculture, was a true hunting-gathering diet consisting of animal protein, animal fat, and relatively small amounts of carbs in very crude forms. Humans can convert some amino acids and lipids into blood sugar or glucose through a process called gluconeogenesis, and also use fat from healthy animals and healthy plant fats and gathered plants as a preferred fuel source for the brain. Carbohydrate addiction and overconsumption of refined carbs is arguably the number one problem with the diet that people are now consuming planet-wide, the so-called SAD diet or the standard American diet. A raw carrot or cucumber has next to no protein or fat, yet no one alive is addicted to them. Why is that? Vegetables and fruits are high in carbs, or you could say sugar. So what's the difference between them and, say, white bread, purified table sugar, or fructose derived from corn? Well, the answer, I think, is self-evident. Just look at people who eat a ton of refined carbs. Look at their skin, their teeth, and their body composition. Need I say more? Purified forms of sugar and flour are concentrated enough to consume in huge quantities, like just gigantic amounts that are beyond my comprehension. The USDA, for example, states that in 1822, we consumed on average about 6 pounds of refined sugar per year. Today in 2015, that figure has risen to about 100 pounds per person per year. That's an increase of over 1,600%. Let's say you add 1 teaspoon of sugar to a cup of coffee and you drink 2 cups of coffee a day. That's 730 teaspoons right there added up over a year. Now let's say you also drink on average 1 can of Coke or Pepsi per day. 1 can of these sugar monsters contains approximately 7 teaspoons of sugar, which added up equals 2,555 teaspoons in 1 year. So let's do the math, which is a foreign concept to most people when it comes to nutrition. Added up through the course of 1 year, the sugar in the coffee and soda equals 3,285 teaspoons of white death, which is what I like to call sucrose, which is white table sugar. 1 teaspoon of white table sugar weighs approximately 5 grams. 5 grams multiplied by 3,285 teaspoons is equivalent to 16,425 grams, which when divided by 1,000 is just over 16 kilograms or about 36 pounds. So can you see how easy it is to overconsume refined sugar when it's dissolved in fluids? And that's a very marginal estimate per person because I haven't even considered the food most people, in addition to the sugar they consume in drinks. Commercial foods are loaded with table sugar and fructose or composed of refined white flour. They behave the same way. So flour behaves the same way as sugar. So when you're eating bread, think of it as white sugar. It's the same effect biologically and biochemically. Both are sterile. And when animals eat sterile foods, we're animals, we become sterile by eating sterile foods. That's the rule. Both white sugar and white flour destroy insulin chemistry and ruin glucose stability. Both are non-nutritive and displace many essentially needed minerals and B-complex vitamins. Both create a desire to consume far more than what we require biologically. Both elevate cholesterol and triglycerides. Both deplete the nervous system and increase the production of free radicals. Flour even has an added bonus. It contains gluten, lectins, and anti-nutrients that impair mineral absorption, agglutinize the blood, and trigger multiple autoimmune reactions that lead to inflammation and cell membrane destruction in the gut. So the right carbs, like many things in life, have exceptional value if used wisely and in small amounts. But a high-carb diet consisting mainly of refined breads, potatoes, pasta, rice, buns, bagels, candy, donuts, chocolate bars, desserts, sandwiches, etc., will get everyone who eats them into trouble sooner or later. The question is not if, but when. Here's what some leading experts have to say about sugar. Professor Ian MacDonald, chair of the working group of the Scientific Advisory Committee on Nutrition in England, says, "The evidence is stark. Too much sugar is harmful to health, and we all need to cut back." Mick Armstrong, chairman of the British Dental Association, says, "The government now has the evidence and a clear duty to send the strongest possible signal to the food industry that while added sugar might be helping their sales, it is hurting their customers." Robert Lustig, MD, a pediatric neuroendocrinologist, asks us to look beyond the obvious. He says, "Kids are still getting heavier compared with prior generations of kids. The problem is the increase in sugar consumption. Sugar both drives fat storage and makes the brain think it's hungry, setting up a vicious cycle. And finally, by making foods more palatable, people will eat more," says Yanni Friedhoff, MD, assistant professor of family medicine at the University of Ottawa in Ontario, Canada. Further, he says, "Sugar makes food taste better. Companies are even studying how to engineer foods so that they're as palatable as possible to drive up consumption." Well, I became aware recently of a new movie called That Sugar Film, which seeks to educate consumers about the hazards of consuming too much added sugar, which can be found in an estimated 80% of all supermarket foods. The new documentary stars Australian actor Damon Gameno, who modeled his movie after Super Size Me, the 2004 film that followed Morgan Spurlock as he consumed an all-McDonald's diet for 30 days. Remember that? In That Sugar Film, Damon gives up his normal diet of fresh foods for 2 months to see what happens when he shifts to eating a diet containing 40 teaspoons of sugar daily, the amount consumed by the average Australian, Canadian, American, Englishman. Soon after Damon begins the high sugar diet, he finds that his health and waistline quickly spiral out of control. After 18 days, he develops signs of fatty liver, and by the end of the experiment, incurs early type 2 diabetes and increased heart disease risk. Like Morgan Spurlock, Damon thought the only way to find out the truth about sugar was to do an experiment on his own body and assemble a team of doctors and scientists to keep tabs on his health. The evidence was overwhelming. Sugar is toxic and extremely harmful to consume in the same quantities consumed by average Australians. The best part of the film is when Damon goes back to drinking water and eating decent whole foods again. Almost immediately, his weight drops to normal again, and all his symptoms verified by clinical analysis during the experiment literally disappear. So I think the message is clear and is exactly the same message I heard 40 years ago when I discovered the natural health food industry at age 17. Trust nature and trust natural whole food. But when it comes to your own personal health and wellness, absolutely do not trust any government agency, any sugar corporation, or a large food conglomerate. They are literally out to get everything they can from our wallets, purses, and bank accounts, and will say and do almost anything to deceive us. Caveat emptor, people. Let the buyer beware. Well, that's it for this segment of SNU. Thanks for listening. And here's a quote from English-American writer Helen Rowland. A wise woman puts a grain of sugar into everything she says to a man and takes a grain of salt with everything he says to her.